Penguin Random House Canada presents Planet Canada, How Our Expats Are Shaping the Future by John Stackhouse. Read for you by Jonathan Watton. Introduction. The 11th Province. As I neared the end of a sweeping tour of modern Canadian history, I was met by a lone display meant to sum up our country's place in the world. It was a backpack, a rumpled one from the 1980s, emblazoned with a maple leaf. Next to it, encased in plexiglass, was a Canadian passport, and with it a heartwarming, if slightly syrupy, message about the maple leaf and how it's become, to the world, a symbol that reflects positively and warmly on the Canadian wearing it. The Canadian Museum of History in Gatineau, Quebec, across the Ottawa River from Parliament Hill, had placed the display at the end of an interactive tour of domestic events and achievements as a way of showcasing some of the personal tethers we have beyond our borders. It struck me as a kind of gentle ode to the Canadian globetrotter, not the heroic peacekeepers or celebrated astronauts or movie stars on Hollywood's Walk of Fame, but the ordinary Canadians who set out to attempt some extraordinary things. There are plenty of them, certainly, who can be spotted almost anywhere by the Roots hat, Lulu sweatshirt, and mech bag embroidered with a little red flag. But after 150 years as a nation, I had to wonder, is this really how we see ourselves in the world? A nation of lovable backpackers? Like Sean Mannion, the owner of the two items on display, I had traveled through Asia in the 1980s, as proud of the maple leaf on my backpack as I was protective of my Canadian passport. So I was struck by a photograph within the display that showed Mannion, in 1983, standing with two Americans he had met in Fiordland National Park, New Zealand. It projected that boundless, rugged affability the world sees in us and we seem to assume is our national trait. But I figured there had to be more to him, a bit like Canada's place in the world, and decided to track him down. Mannion still lived in the Ottawa region, not far from the museum or where he was raised. He had grown up by the river, becoming a whitewater guide, a skill that would take him to New Zealand, and then Nepal, India, Guatemala, Mexico, and the western United States. In those days, when he was hitchhiking between rivers, he learned the maple leaf was his best ticket. People everywhere, he discovered, loved Canadians. They loved our sense of community, our respect for other cultures, and our collective humility, which you can hear in Mannion's voice when he says, "Son of a gun," and "Where the heck?" They opened their doors to us because, as a country, we've opened our doors to them. As the museum display states in an uncharacteristic burst of immodesty, Canada is one of the world's most admired countries. Its reputation and public image reflect stability and compassion, natural beauty and political freedom. It is an extraordinary work in progress. Unfortunately, in the decades since Mannion traipsed around Asia, a lot has changed. Our middle power status has eroded, leaving us to feel a bit like those kids in the middle row of a class picture. Necessary, nice, and unnoticed. We're no longer the go-to nation for peacekeeping, or the reliable friend of foreign aid. On trade, we've been pushed around by the big kids in the back row of that class picture, while in business, we've lost far more global head offices than we've built. But in that same period, something equally remarkable has happened. While Canada's share of global everything, GDP, defense, aid, R&D, has declined, our share of expat influence has grown. They've traded backpacks for briefcases and have started to shape the world and our place in it. In an age of communities and networks powered by individuals more than states, they've become Planet Canada. These are the Canadians who aren't just visiting. They're living, working, studying, and connecting abroad, increasingly as a diaspora. Some are well-known, like Mark Carney, formerly of the Bank of England and now leading the fight against climate change, or Lauren Michaels of Saturday Night Live, or Rachel McAdams of Hollywood fame. But most of Canada's 2 million or so expatriates are known only in their own circles. They're Canadians, usually by birth, always by passport, and often by association. But they're forgotten to Canada in terms of spirit and impact. When I first went overseas in the 1980s, Canada was the model of abundance in a world shaped by scarcity. Like Australia and a few others, we were the land of plenty, with educated people and prolific resources, along with the peace and prosperity that were so lacking elsewhere. We were one of the only middle powers with connections to east and west, north and south. When the world opened its doors, we entered. But today, with abundance everywhere, the internet has given everyone access to everything. And there are a lot of everyone's. The global population is adding a new Canada every 6 months, and on average, each generation is better nourished, educated, and connected than when Mannion and our generation went abroad. That means that in the 2020s, there will be more countries brokering peace, building sustainable businesses, pursuing justice and human rights, in short, doing what Canada once considered its special role. Which means Canada and Canadians will need to imagine ourselves in the spirit of an Israel or Singapore, thinking less like a middle power and more like an entrepreneurial people, harnessing our global population to build our place in a more crowded and connected world. Sadly, we may be the only major country, or minor one for that matter, that doesn't think strategically about its diaspora. We should start by recognizing that we have one and reaching out to them, which is what our closest allies and rivals are doing with theirs. From Ireland to India, nations with global populations are increasingly turning to their diasporas for help, recognizing the decades ahead will be influenced by people networks more than power centers. In a world of smart machines, stateless corporations, and economic forces beyond the control of any government, those nations seem to realize such networks will be to the 21st century what naval fleets were to the 19th and multinational corporations to the century in between. I first began to appreciate our global population in the 1990s when I became part of it as an overseas correspondent for the Globe and Mail based in New Delhi. Over nearly 8 years living and working abroad, pretty much everywhere I went, there were Canadians forging interesting and important paths. Some were civic builders, designing a university course in Nairobi or engineering a pipeline across Central Asia. Some were lone wolves, running trading operations in Jaffna or Kinshasa. Some were up to no good, like the Briex geologists in Indonesia or the Cotter family, whom I traced across northern Pakistan before 9/11. I knew most Canadians had always been seen and welcomed as good global citizens. But in that brief window between the Cold War and the War on Terror, as every corner of the world opened up, some peacefully, some through violence, it was evident that many Canadians, Louise Arbour, Stephen Lewis, Sergio Marchionne, were doing more than just going along. They were stepping to the forefront, to lead in ways that perhaps our country no longer could. At the dawn of this new global age, the internet remade global commerce, while cheap, easy air travel put more strangers in more strange places than humanity had ever experienced. Cheap, easy telecommunications kept them more connected, too, in ways we'd never imagined. As borders softened and cultures melded, a new great migration took form. Immigrants headed west, and refugees headed north. At the same time, a new global class of migrants moved east and south, with a small clutch of Canadians in the vanguard. The academic and former diplomat Jennifer Welsh was among them, keeping one foot in Florence and the other in Oxford as she tracked the political upheaval caused by these movements and the progress they could unleash. Entering the new millennium and a new digital age, Canadians, Welsh felt, needed to reimagine ourselves, to conceive of our country not just as Canada with a capital C, the corporate entity represented by the flag or by government officials, but also as Canadians. This new Canada was one that could outgrow geography and transcend borders, projecting itself through its diaspora as a voice for principles and values, and an approach to community that the rest of the world was starting to lose in its tribal retreat to a smaller, older age of identity. Historically, diasporas have been rooted in negative events, expulsions, pogroms, wars, any of the horrors that cause people to leave their homelands en masse. Their existence was captured in a simple word drawn from the Greek diasporin, to scatter. Once scattered to the winds, a diaspora had to find ways to come back together, through language, culture, and a shared narrative, and to preserve a common identity that was often the only thing its members had brought with them. Increasingly, diasporas the world over have needed those strengths to absorb the shock.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?